This episode of the Loyal Sun Show is brought to you by Rendine Consulting. If you've listened to us for any amount of time, you know all about Rendine Consulting's commitment to the Pitt Athletics program and brand, and how much they've meant to the Loyal Suns. That's Rendine Consulting, providing investment managers assistance with technology integration. Visit www.rendineconsulting.com for more information. That's www.rendineconsulting.com. Hello and welcome back to the Loyal Sun Show. That's at the Loyal Suns on Twitter. Follow us there and follow us here for Pitt sports content you won't want to miss. If you love having the best running back in the ACC and hate not getting one more chance to crush Jeff Collins, this is the place for you. The Loyal Sun Show, a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt athletics fix, brought to you by Pittsburgh Sports Now. Today is Wednesday, September 28th, and meh.
That about sums up Saturday, yep.
Noon games against FCS teams can have that effect. So it was a fun morning. It was nice to get into the gold lot before the ass crack of dawn, but the game left a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, I think as long as your last name isn't Abanacanda, you're probably going to forget that one. Super unmemorable. A little bit disappointing if you were looking for certain things that game. But you know what? We don't need to spend a ton of time on this. I don't think anyone's listening to this for us to really get into the weeds on the Rhode Island Rams. So why don't we do this? In order to recap the game, let's break it down into this simple binary discussion. Was this game a startling indication of Pitt's mediocrity or an elaborate game of possum? Squid, why don't you start off?
I mean, I'm going to lean more to the possum side, but I don't think it was very elaborate. I think it was just the game plan was to run the ball and get the ball to Slovis' hands as quick as possible and do not let him get touched. I think they tried like one downfield pass and he got hit. And that eliminated any thought of being aggressive again.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think for the most part, Pitt just wanted to get in and get out with a win. Don't let any more guys get banged up than needed. Izzy, 19 carries, maybe a little surprising, but almost feel like Narduzzi's pushing the Izzy for Doak Walker award train right now. But we'll see. We'll see how that continues. But I felt like with all the screen passes, maybe that's something, a wrinkle that they want to add to the offense, something that they see is something that they can exploit, or maybe just give some of those receivers, i.e. Bub Means, an opportunity to make some plays and get their hands on the ball, get in some type of rhythm. But unfortunately, it didn't really turn into too much during the game. You know, 6 for 38 for Bub Means still leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, nobody in the stands was happy with the performance or the play calling. I think we all kind of understood, whatever, we're going to win this game no matter what we do. We would love to see another 77-point outing, but that didn't happen. So in result, there are a lot of yinzers yelling about the play calling, Narduzzi, Cignetti, throw it downfield, throw it downfield, but we didn't get it, and it's whatever.
Yeah, I feel super validated in the take I had in last week's show, which was this is gonna be a get right game for Bub Means. They're gonna force feed him a little bit downfield to try to get his confidence up. I was wrong about that part. Everything that we threw was completely horizontal, and it was a little bit disappointing because this felt like it was a great chance to essentially practice passing the ball, right? Because we know Slovis can, or at least those of us with decent eyeballs that don't just show up to Pitt games to bitch, can see that Slovis can throw it downfield a little bit. We saw it in the four quarters that mattered this year, but it seems like Narduzzi had a different agenda, and that was simply to control the game and get out of there without more injuries. And We'll see if we if 86 is on the field against Georgia Tech, that goal will have been successful.
But aside from that, even the defense didn't play very well. You have a big play. The run went for 76 yards. You hate to see that. Gave up a lot of points. They had a lot of third, fourth string guys in too. So overall, I don't think anybody left that game with a good taste in their mouth, aside from Izzy. All 38,000 of people in the stadium.
38's a little bold. Is that what it was announced at?
It was definitely not that high.
Sean Fitzsimmons had his first career sack, so he's probably leaving a little happy. And the first of many. We've heard nothing but good things about him. So it was nice to see some of those young guys who don't play a lot get their first taste of action. Still would have liked to not see them let up 24 points against an FCS team, but end of the day, I think the goal was accomplished, and let's just move on to next week.
I know we talked about that spread of 35.5. I think we all took Pitt to cover.
It felt like free money.
Yeah, I went around telling some people Pitt beats up on FCS teams lately. With Narduzzi, the talent we have, they'll blow them out. So, felt like an ass there, but whatever. I keep you saying that, but that's how it feels. It was just on to the next one.
And it's important to be clear here. At no point did this game feel even kind of in jeopardy. Like, the thought of Rhode Island tying it up at any point or even beating us, it didn't even cross my mind the entire game. But it kind of looks like the defense felt the same way. It felt very lackadaisical. You know, it's not like they were, you know, the Rams were marching on Pitt. It was more like, oh, they kind of let up one play in pass coverage, or, you know, they had one long run. There were a lot of drives that were kept alive by some pass interference penalties or some really stupid mistakes. It just kind of felt like they did not take Rhode Island seriously. So I'm not going to, you know, light the emergency flare yet on, you know, Pitt, but this was clearly a game that they just, all they cared about was the clock hitting zero and Pitt having more points than Rhode Island. There was no attempt at style points, no attempt at trying out something new or showing their hand before ACC play. It was just get in, get out, get healthy.
I mean, Pitt allowed 286 yards of offense. 63 of those came on one play on the long touchdown run. So,
and then 90 of those came on a garbage time drive against our fourth stringers.
Right. So the defense wasn't terrible. They let up some chunk plays. You don't want to see that happen. I'm sure they'll clean it up this week. But the biggest loss taken on Saturday was us and our cooler.
That was, well, it was your cooler by proxy. So why don't you take our listeners through what we found out after our tweet looking for clues after the game Saturday?
Yeah, we had the bright idea that we were going to leave the cooler out. For some reason, we didn't want to put it in one of the vehicles. We didn't want it to get taken home, but it definitely had to be taken home at some point. I don't know what the thought process was there. Just bad planning.
I feel like a few people thought they were going to leave the game after like one quarter when Pitt was up like 35-0 already and to start drinking in the parking lot again. So yeah, that was probably the thought process.
We overlooked it, just kind of like Pitt's defense overlooked the Rams offense. We overlooked it a little bit. Well, we came back after the game. Unfortunately, didn't actually leave the stadium until the game was over. That was disappointing. But yeah, get back to the parking lot and the cooler's gone. So we sent out that tweet last night. Within an hour, one of our buddies was contacted, and we were informed that someone saw the cooler. It was being used by a homeless man.
Not just anyone. Pitt's assistant head wrestling coach, who is a listener to the show and future guest. He was our tip here.
Right. So he saw a homeless man with the cooler outside of TC selling the beer out of the cooler that we left in there. So it kind of softens the blow a little bit to know that that's the story that came out of this.
Admire the hustle. Yeah.
I was laughing my ass off when we were tipped off to that, but yeah. $140 down the drain, but got a new cooler and a story out of it. So on to next week. We just got to be better. Can't sleepwalk into tailgates like that.
Yeah, I love the story because our guy Drew, the assistant wrestling coach, he said he was just walking by, saw the homeless guy, was like, oh, what an industrious homeless person. And then like moments later, looked down, saw our tweet, was like, oh, you gotta be shitting me. I mean, I hope he made a couple bucks off of it. I hope, you know, some party goers at Tequila Cowboy got some cheap drinks, certainly cheaper than they were gonna get in TC. But you know, that was a pretty nice cooler.
It's yeah. Really nice.
That's the sport of football. It's going to be next cooler up. The Georgia Tech tailgate, like this Pitt defense. We got to see what kind of depth they have. We'll see what kind of depth we have in the cooler department. We actually might not need it. It's going to be a chilly fall weather day, 8 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, and we're certainly going to learn from our mistakes, much as we hope Frank Cignetti does in you know, terms of conservative play calling. You know, we're you put it in the trunk, you lock it, you communicate with each other. Hey, don't take this car home yet. We might want to have a couple of those beers after the game so that, you know, there's no gray areas leaving it out. Just we need to be better. And, you know, it's a long season, so we have the opportunity to get better. And we just hope that the playoff committee recognizes that.
Yeah, we'll watch the tape, we'll clean it up, and we'll be better next week.
The Pitt Panthers start ACC play against the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets on Saturday night. We've already gotten the opportunity to learn a little bit more about our rivals across the Atlantic Coast Conference and what we might expect as we fight to reclaim the ACC championship. Guys, why don't you tell me what we've seen thus far from the rest of the ACC, what we can expect going forward, and any of the surprises that we found along the way.
I think we should start with the biggest shock, if you will, from Saturday, and that's Miami getting boat raced by Middle Tennessee State.
Boat raced.
There were people who had Miami in like their top 10. Van Dyke was crowned a Heisman finalist before the year started, and he got benched, and Miami gave up so many yards to this team. This team that lost to James Madison a few weeks prior. That was
they didn't just lose to James Madison. James Madison beat them 44-7. They got blown out by James Madison.
And they blew up Miami in their home stadium, but there's no home field advantage there. Not to be an attendance state fan, but Tyler Van Dyke said himself. He looks forward to those away games.
Does this make James Madison the retroactive and de facto Coastal Conference preseason champion?
Spin it however you want. I just know Miami stinks.
Yeah, so I think we can kind of extrapolate this into a general theme. You know, let me know if you guys jive with this, but it feels like everyone in the ACC that was supposed to be very, very good this year has underwhelmed, and everyone that was just supposed to be an absolute dumpster fire is actually kind of okay, except for Georgia Tech.
If you narrow that down to the Coastal, I think if you look at the Atlantic, Clemson, NC State, and Wake, all probably pretty good. They haven't played a ton of competition yet. NC State has been underwhelming, but you've got four teams on that side of the division, including Syracuse, who are 4-0. I'm sorry, on that side of the conference in that division. But if you look up and down the Coastal division, it's bad. And to be honest, Pitt is at the point after this week, if Pitt does not win the Coastal, this season is a failure.
Absolutely.
It has to be Charlotte or bust at this point. If you would have told me before the season that Pitt goes, you know, 10-2, has a chance going into that Miami game, and that's a winner take all for the Coastal, and they lose a tough game in Miami before the season, I would have been said, yeah, you know what? That's, you can still call that a successful season. If they don't win the Coastal, it's a failure.
It's funny to look at it. We were worried about Virginia. Brennan Armstrong forgot how to play football. Tony Elliott ruined that team.
Completely forgot how to throw a football. I don't know what the hell is going on over there.
North Carolina, Drake May might be better than we thought, but that defense is abysmal. They gave up over 40 points to a very bad Notre Dame offense. Duke is 3-1, but they lost to Kansas, so take that for whatever you'd like to think of it. VTech is VTech of the last few years. Nothing scares you. It should be Pitt. I think Pitt is head and shoulders the best team on paper in this conference.
Yeah, I would go
division.
It gets confusing. It's all semantics. Call it whatever you want. I would go as far to say I think we might get to a point where we won't even need to beat Miami. Like, we'd love to beat Miami. We need to beat Miami. But we might not, like, need to beat Miami. I could see them getting tripped up by whatever C-minus teams in the ACC they play this year, and it not even mattering by the time we show up to Coral Gables. But I would also like to, as much as I agree with you guys' take on the Coastal, I think that the Atlantic has also shown that it is not that good. I know Clemson has a 5 next to their name and NC State a 10. I just, based on the eyeball test alone, I don't think either of them deserve that ranking. And I would go as far to say, as you know, Pitt's expectations should be to repeat, because I don't think either of those football teams are better than Pitt.
Sure. But before we continue to trash how bad the ACC is, let's just point out that we have 6 ranked teams, and that's the second most of any conference behind the SEC, who has 7. So you might think Pitt is better than some of those teams, but as a whole, the conference is performing pretty well. Some of those areas are not quite what we expected. Like, Florida State's ranked. Nobody gave them a thought.
I don't want to take away from the ACC, because that is definitive proof that we are the second best conference in the country. And I don't need to hear anything else, but I also think Florida State's is very much a byproduct of this massive brand name beat 4 cupcakes. And that's counting LSU on the most down year we're probably going to see for LSU for the rest of forever. And so naturally they were just kind of gifted a top 25 spot. They are 1 spot ahead of Pitt. They are certainly not better than Pitt.
Well, they play Wake Forest, NC State, and Clemson in the next 3 weeks. So we're going to find out how...
We're going to find out real quick
how good they are. So we're not totally sure who is actually good in that second tier. But I think what we can agree on is that the ACC championship game will include Pitt, NC State, or Clemson, most likely. I think those are the 3 teams that have a chance to separate themselves from the pack. I mean, Wake Forest could, but they already are behind the 8-ball if that loss to Clemson. So if it's not one of those 3 teams, I would be very, very surprised.
So who are you guys most scared of in the Coastal? Because I'm trying to look up and down, and I'm thinking maybe right now for me it's UNC, just because of our history with UNC. Yes. Drake May threw another 5 touchdowns this week. So are they any good? I don't know. The defense is obviously terrible, but they do have some offensive firepower. I do worry. Does Pitt go down to Chapel Hill and they just can't hang in a shootout because we haven't thrown the ball that well, or whatever may happen? I think our defense can probably figure it out. I trust that, and I do think we will be able to put up points, but that's just the one game, I think. Whereas before it was always Miami. Miami is the scariest game in the ACC. Maybe my eyes are starting to move to that UNC game in Chapel Hill.
I couldn't agree more, Dylan. Really, I do not want to overlook Miami. I feel like that is what we have done in the last 5 minutes. So we need to sprinkle in a little please win in order to get right with God or whatever for that Miami game. But no, UNC scares me a little bit more just because of the matchup. If they can score splash plays, Pitt gives up splash plays. And then it becomes a thing of, like, are we going to have the correct game plan to keep up with the amount of points they score? I trust Frank Cignetti. I know we've had to make a lot of excuses for him thus far, but if they try to go in and take the air out of the ball against UNC, it could be a really troublesome matchup.
Yeah, I think we're going to learn a little bit more about UNC in the coming weeks. They're giving up 40 points a game. They've played Florida A&M, Appalachian State, Georgia State, and Notre Dame with a backup quarterback. So... yeah, they're scoring points, haven't faced Murderer's Row. Their defense is giving up points to that same group of teams that isn't very good. So even if they aren't playing great teams, I have to imagine they're going to slip up a few times in the ACC play just because of how bad that defense is. But that still worries me the most, because what you two just said, Drake May will probably throw for a ton of yards and it'll come down to stop, maybe overtime again, because that's just how the Pitt UNC saga has gone.
So what is the worst Pitt could finish this season, and you think that this is not a complete train wreck? Like, I'm on the verge of saying 9-3, and I never thought I'd say 9-3 for Pitt was a bad season, but I'm on the verge of saying if Pitt finishes 9-3, they squandered an opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think two ACC losses would be disappointing. If we slip up once, I'd be upset because I think we should run the table. But I think we'd still get to Charlotte with one, maybe even two ACC losses. So if we had the Charlotte at the end of the day, I'll probably be happy, but losing two would be a letdown.
I don't think Pitt's going to be a dog in any of the remaining games. I'm frantically trying to pull up some of the FPI stuff, but assuming Miami is not given an edge over us, which ESPN's FPI matchup predictor gives them a 60% chance of winning against us, which I simply do not buy given the way they've looked. It would require a loss to Miami, which in and of itself would be disappointing, and then a slip up against one of those C-plus teams that we play, you know, Syracuse, Duke, who isn't the worst team in the entire world, still like bad, but I was surprised they won a game this year. And then, of course, UNC.
Yeah, we even mentioned one of our opponents, probably going to be one of the biggest swing games of the season at Louisville. We've seen Cunningham kind of do the same thing as Drake May. They're probably the Atlantic version of UNC. Quarterback gets a lot of yards. Defense can stop anybody. Not great record-wise. So it'll come down to how the team plays tonight up, who shows up, because those teams aren't as good as Pitt, but because they have those skill players, can make it scary. But we're going to walk into Louisville, physically walk into Louisville for that away trip and leave winners. I can taste it already.
Let's just walk out of the next 2 weeks healthy and having put on a show for the voters, because Narduzzi has made it very clear that the only thing that matters to him is ending the game with more points than the other team.
And that's what should matter to us too.
Yeah, but John, the little tiny number, it looks so good, especially when it gets smaller.
Steady as she goes.
Whatever. Please welcome back to the show Georgia Tech writer for the Football Outsiders and from the Rumble Seats, Robert Binion. Robert, how you doing? How you been?
I'm good. I am really happy that we now have a coaching vacancy and not a sitting head coach who had worn out his welcome. The Georgia Tech fan base is reinvigorated. Our page views over the last 2 days are exponentially higher than they have
Love
been
it.
For every game so far this season. So we're excited for a new start over here.
Did you expect it to only take 4 weeks for this to happen?
Personally, this is about where I thought it was going to be. I actually thought it would be after you guys destroyed us this coming weekend. But
we were hoping that too.
We got a weekend start on what I expected.
Yeah, so we can jump right into it. The last time we spoke, both of our programs were feeling pretty good about where we were at, and you were much higher on Jeff Collins, if I recall, about 365 days ago than you are right now. Please, can you help Pitt fans understand how we got from where you were about week 4 or 5 last year to now coachless?
It's a great question. We're doing a roundtable article going up tomorrow to try to track some of that progression. So a year ago, we had just lost really close to Clemson and beaten North Carolina very soundly. And I think the things that were, you know, that stood out the most about that, Jeff Sims had come off the bench after missing a couple games with injury and had just knifed through the Carolina defense. And our defense had, I think, 11 tackles for loss in the first half of that Carolina game, which is like, you know, 4 games worth normally for us. And it just seemed like breakthrough, like defense, chaos, disruption, what we've been promised. It's happening. Jeff Sims is finding something. And I think I was irrationally confident going into the Pitt game last year, and we know how that went. 2 first quarter interceptions. What was it, 28-0 or 28-7 within like 10 minutes? And I think I realized that some of that Clemson and Carolina stuff had been very just matchup specific, very, very contextual with some things going on with those two teams, and we really didn't have that much improvement on our side. And from there, we barely beat Duke a week later, game that was really concerning, and then the wheels absolutely fell off the second half of the season. The Virginia game, you saw the defense just not capable of covering anybody, and that's when you started to get this week-by-week promise of, we'll get it fixed. We've got trust and communication issues, but don't worry, we're going to get it fixed. It's like, well, you're starting three fifth-year seniors in the secondary, so if you have trust and communication issues, it's probably a pretty deep-seated issue, right? As the year goes, we give Phil Dracovic a career-best performance, Tyler Van Dyke career-best performance, don't even show up for the Notre Dame and Georgia games. And it was obvious that something was very, very rotten in the edge building in Atlanta. And I think I was ready for a change by week 9 last year. That's when I started to become pretty outspoken that nothing was changing. No promises were being kept. No progress was being made. It was over. So that was a pretty big shift from week 5 heading into matchup with you guys that I felt okay about.
Were you given any hope in the off season from the amount of transfers that Collins was able to bring? I know you guys lost a little bit, quite a bit, especially through Jahmyr Gibbs going to Alabama, but you guys were one of the most active teams in the transfer portal.
Yeah, I personally didn't buy any of that. The guys that we were bringing in were guys who had produced zero or close to zero at Power Five schools. It was guys with recruiting pedigrees that clearly hadn't developed, hadn't been able to get on the field. It seemed like something you could kind of create a headline about that had no substance. And I think the first 4 weeks have very much borne out that hypothesis. I mean, the guys who are getting a lot of playing time, I mean, you're seeing them with PFF grades in the 40s and 50s, and a bunch of them aren't even seeing the field. I mean, the incoming transfers were not anything for Tech fans to be realistically excited about, even though it did sell a chunk of the fan base that this year was going to be different.
Now, in the Georgia Tech community, does it feel like there's a lack of talent within the football program, or does it feel more just foundational?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's one of the places where you're still getting some disagreement, because if you look at something like the, you know, 24/7 team talent index, we're mid-30s nationally. So you have mid-30s talent evaluation metric, and, you know, any power ranking, we're going to be 103 to 107 right now, right? So there's just this massive disconnect between what the roster supposedly is and what the on-field performance is. For me, there's several factors there. One, I mean, I think you have just a miscalculation on some of these guys who are transfers, where they're still getting, you know, priced in as kind of these high caliber recruits, when clearly, you know, they're guys who hadn't really panned out. They're guys that I think our current staff misevaluated by choosing to bring in and use a roster spot on in a lot of cases. And then you have just a complete inability to develop any position on the roster. I mean, I think that's probably the calling card of this staff's failure, is you just see no improvement from the time these guys enter the door to now, you know, halfway through year 4. I mean, Jeff Sims hasn't gotten better. The offensive line hasn't gotten better. Secondary technique hasn't gotten a lot better. I mean, just across the board, you see just this flat line of guys not taking steps forward.
Well, you said a good transition here. You said the team was flatlining. Do you think this firing will produce a spark? Do you think this will be a rallying cry, or is this just we aren't very good and survive the rest of the year, and hopefully we hire somebody with a little bit of promise?
Yeah. The few guys on the team who've been kind of on social media the last 24 hours are like, I'm devastated, I'm sick, why would they do this in the middle of the season? I mean, I do think that personally, Collins is actually a good guy. I mean, I think he's warm-hearted and kind and caring about his players. So I think in some sense you're going to have some
terrible at handshakes, though.
He can be a little petty and defensive as well. So I think there's some sadness from at least a subset of the team. I also think that it's been such a dead weight around the team's neck since the middle of last season that you're going to at least have some freedom, some, you know, you're no longer worried about your coach getting fired. It's over with. Let's try some things on offense. Let's air it out a little bit. Let's take some risks. So I think you're going to see effort. I think we're just going to find out, is the team really just this bad? And is it you know, going to take even longer to turn it over.
So where does that leave your fan base in terms of, you know, levels of hopefulness? Is this a situation where all hope is lost, or is the sentiment of the fan base, hey, if we get a pretty good hire in there, you know, a good skipper, we can get back to a very respectable level?
Yeah, definitely the latter right now. I mean, it's people are back on board. People are excited about a new day. People are absolutely hopeful that a coach who can develop, can deploy the players with reasonable schematic ability can get you back to something like what we had with Johnson. I think the hopelessness would just come if the next guy can't do it. Then I think you start to see some real long-term fear that something's fundamentally broken. But there's definitely a big appetite for let's go hard after a smart next guy who's got some substance to him, and let's get back all in and see what we can do together.
So what names have been thrown out in the community? Any wish list guys for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm real high on Jamie Chadwell from Coastal Carolina. You've seen him build from what was, you know, a brand new FBS program. They're 26-3 in the last 3 years. They've been, you know, they put a couple guys in the NFL. Obviously, he's developed a quarterback who's unbelievable. I think he's got the kind of, you know, program building experience at Charleston Southern, at North Greenville, at Coastal that is really what's going to be necessary to place like Tech. Probably number two guy for me is trying to coax Bill Clark out of his retirement. The resurrection job he did at UAB is really something that nobody else has had to do at the FBS in quite a while. You know, you go from having your football team taken out from underneath you to winning 10 games a year, winning your conference multiple times, building it up without talent advantages over your competitors. I mean, those are the kind of guys that I think Tech has to target. Can you build with less? Can you do more with less? Can you make good use of limited resources? So those two guys are at the top of my list. Sean Lewis at Kent State, I think, is really interesting. Tyson Helton at Western Kentucky is really interesting. I think you're going to have a conversation with Dan Mullen probably. He's done some building of his own. You know, Mississippi State is unique from Tech, but also where they were when he took over was not great, and he built that up into something. So those are probably five of the guys that first come to mind for me, as well as, you know, some of the people I'm talking to.
Is any of the reason that you want Chadwell because he runs the modern day triple offense, if you will?
So I think it's beautiful to watch, but you know, more deeply than that, it's something that creates schematic advantage when you have talent deficiency. And I think he's really done a great job with that. You saw it in the BYU game 2 years ago. He knows how to out scheme a bigger team. And that's something you just have to be able to do at Tech, no matter who you are.
Would you be open to going back to the triple option if that was on the table? Do you miss it at all? We asked you last year. Yeah. The answer changed.
I mean, I miss the grace of it when it's running well. I miss the results that we had. I also think that you'd have to have an adaptation to it. I mean, I think even if you talk to a guy like Jeff Monken at Army, I mean, he's you know, I watched them a couple of weeks ago against UTSA, and they're in shotgun every time on third down. Like they can roll out the quarterback. Like they're doing things that Johnson refused to ever even consider. And so even if it was something that's, you know, kind of option heavy, you're still going to have adaptations that spread people out a little bit more, that get the quarterback in space, that can, you know, develop a quarterback. So you've got to be able to combine those two things to be successful, I think, going forward.
So I couldn't help but notice that amongst your list was not one certain Coach Prime out of Jackson State. Have you not been hearing the rumors? It's a done deal.
I mean, I have Twitter. I've seen the rumors. So a couple things there. I think that the things that he's best at in terms of recruiting and really being able to catch the attention of high profile players, whether that's Travis Hunter, Shamar Stewart, these guys. There's so many constraints at Tech, culturally, academically, financially, that I think you'd be cutting off two of his limbs to start. And the things that I think would make him potentially really successful somewhere like Florida State, I just can't see him hitting that recruiting ceiling at Tech in the same way. And then beyond that, we don't have proof of him being able to, you know, build out schemes over the long haul, develop guys over the long haul. He may well turn out to be fantastic at those things. I'm not digging the guy at all, but we don't know. And to me, if the things that he's potentially best at, he couldn't fully deploy at Tech, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to really go down that road very far.
So we've hammered you enough about this coaching situation. I'm sure it's all you'll talk about for the rest of the season. So we did want to talk a little bit about this game that's happening on Saturday night. First off, primetime game, 8 p.m. on the ACC network. Look at that. Who would have thought?
I was going to say, that's purely that Pitt can draw right now, because I can tell you nobody's interested in watching my team right now.
Well, it could be, you know, the big storyline, the first game without the head coach. But so tell us why, or if there's any reason why, we as Pitt fans who are always irrationally pessimistic, why we should be maybe a little nervous going into Saturday night?
I'm mad all the time.
Our defense is a lot better than it was last year. We've got a defensive end named Keon White who transferred from Old Dominion, broke his leg before last season and missed most of the year. He's the best defensive end we've had in maybe a decade. He's got 4 sacks already. I don't think we had anybody with more than 3 all of last year. He can actually give you some trouble up front. And the trust communication refrains we heard about the secondary last year actually do seem to mostly be resolved with those guys having all moved on. The secondary has been, there's not just NFL prospects left and right, but they're solid. They're not giving up these just glitchy, massive explosives where nobody's in coverage like they were last year. So you're going to have to, I think the issue is can Tech stop Pitt from doing what Ole Miss did, which is run 60 times for 320 yards. I mean, that's really my biggest concern, because I do think the pass rush and coverage are a lot better than they were. We let I think Pickett had 405 touchdowns against us last year. I don't think that's going to happen. So we can make life a little bit harder. You're not just going to have free runners, you know, everywhere. And so if you make mistakes, then, keeps things interesting. Our offense is terrible. It's really, we hit one big explosive to score last week. But when it comes to just down-to-down efficiency, we really struggle to maintain drive. So, JT Daniels hit a few things like that week one, if I remember right. So, the path for Tech is a couple of explosive passing plays and a couple Pitt interceptions, and the running game is just not quite good enough to score every drive. I mean, that's the kind of game that Tech could win, I think. It's not likely, but it's possible.
So to what degree does it worry you that the defense that's given up about 600 yards rushing the last 2 weeks is currently staring down the barrel of the ACC leading rusher and Izzy Abanikanda?
It worries me a great deal. It's what I expect him to have 220 yards on Saturday, and that'll be the lead of my column next week. That's exactly what we expected to happen, and it did. Narduzzi seems committed to that style of football this year, so it's hard to see him going away from that, and it's hard to see Tech really finding consistent success on the ground defensively. So, yes, highly concerned about what's coming at us.
So you have your own power analytical model, the Binion Power Index, is it?
Yeah, Binion Index is what we normally say, or Bindex for a nice colloquialism.
So we've seen it featured from a couple pretty prominent football writers, some of the math workups that you do about, you know, expected efficiencies and whatnot. So as your model sits right now, how good does it think this Pitt team is? Because we are also trying to figure it out.
Yeah, why don't you give me just a second? I know for our game in particular, I think I've Pitt by right around 21. I think the spread has moved up just north of that. But I think, you know, about 3 touchdowns sounds about right. Overall, I've got Pitt right next to NC State and Florida State, plus a +10 rating, which is you know, about the 20th best team in the country. So I think probably compared to conventional wisdom, my numbers are probably a little higher on Pitt than others are. I mean, I you know, we saw the Tennessee game as pretty close to a, you know, a coin flip where Pitt acquitted themselves well and, you know, likely wins if there's a few less quarterback pressures. Right. So I don't think that Pitt's quite as good as last year, but the defense is great. The running game's good. And the passing game is fine enough to kind of keep you in that second tier of teams from, you know, 5 to 25 right now.
That feels like it hit the nail pretty much on the head. But at the same time, it's kind of that same sentiment that we, through four games, haven't seen what we think this Pitt football team is. You know, there's been multiple, the Tennessee game, Keaton Slovis gets hurt, so we lose him for a game and a half. They go from throwing the ball 20 times out of shotgun in the first half into the next game where they threw it 12 times with Nate Yarnell. So it really is. But it's funny that the Bendix put us right about where I think we probably should be. So
that's the beauty of averaging things out, right? Like each game's not quite what you think it is, but you put the whole thing in a blender and it's like, that feels about right. I mean, I have, you know, Pitt as the clear favorite to win the Coastal. I've been saying that since July. I don't see any reason to deviate from that. I mean, again, the upside is not quite as high as last year. You don't have that explosiveness from the passing game that you did, but it's a really solid team and, you know, should expect to win most games from here on out.
Does the Bindex take into account every living person on the roster getting hurt? Because I don't have any numbers in front of me to prove this, but I think that we are the most injured team in college football in the Power Five level. So is that taken into account?
So generally, really, there's two ways that we see injuries really impact things. One is if there's a quarterback injury where there's just this clear downgrade from QB1 to QB2. So like I had Wake downgraded like 5 to 7 points until Hartman came back, right? That's just kind of a manual adjustment that I have to make where it's obvious that, you know, the difference is stark. And then really other than that, it's really just as the injuries affect performance over time, and that just gets built into the team's rating, right? They're not playing as well because they don't have people, but I don't have the capacity to go in and make adjustments kind of week to week injuries for 131 teams. That would be a full-time job. So,
yeah, that would be a lot. This is only our side hustle, you know,
that would be a lot from Pitt alone, let alone 130 other teams. So, right. Don't blame me for not diving into that.
No, not at all. So you mentioned that the Bindex has Pitt as about a 20-point favorite, but we know as good as math is at backing things up in an intelligent way, college football is also a game driven by stupid bullshit. And under that umbrella, I would throw the galvanizing feeling of losing your coach. So while the analytics say 20 points, how do you feel about how this game is going to end up, given the possibility that Georgia Tech might have a little bit more fire?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the coaching change, you just have to say that there's more variance than you would normally say, right? If normally I would say, okay, it's a 20-point number, I feel pretty good. The outcome is going to be between, you know, 13 and 27. I think this week it's a lot more like I feel good about the outcome is going to be between 3 and 37. I mean, I think it could go really, really poorly. You know, you saw Nebraska after Frost, right? They came out and just get absolutely blasted by Oklahoma, who turns out this week really doesn't have a very good defense. So it could easily go in that direction and Pitt wins, you know, 42-3. It could also come out where the team is galvanized, where you see a kind of defensive ferocity we haven't seen consistently, where the offensive line actually manages to keep Sims off, you know, off the turf for four quarters. If I had to bet, I'd bet more on the 42-3 direction. It's just not a team that has shown they respond well to adversity. It's not a team that has bounced back when, you know, when things go bad. It's like we've seen this punt block thing happen, and every time it happens, it turns the game. It's like the team just loses gumption after that of like, oh, something bad happened again. We're going to give up for three straight possessions. And you go from a, you know, one possession to three possession game in 10 minutes. And that's just the kind of ethos that's been around this team for a couple years now. And it's until I see otherwise, that's the direction I would predict, unfortunately.
So can we nail you to that 42-3 number?
42-3. Well, no, our kicking's horrible, so I wouldn't predict a field goal. like 2 out of 5 on field goals. So I haven't written my preview yet, but I'm probably going to land more like 35-7. I think it's about where I'd land.
That kind of I still don't like when people
doesn't
make me feel any better.
You guys have anxiety?
Oh, yeah, man. All the time. Do you know who we are?
We felt better with Collins than without Collins. When he got a fire, we're like, oh man, this might be a game.
I don't know about all that. Still his roster and still his assistant, so you don't need to be too anxious. Yeah, it's maybe if it was at home and it's all of a sudden like, oh, we've got a crowd, there's excitement. It's just hard for me to see. 5 days after the team finds out they're getting a new coach, a guy that, you know, within the locker room, at least most of them enjoyed him. I think, there's been so many just boneheaded things with play calling and none of that's going to get fixed in a week. Let me just do what I can to alleviate your anxiety for the next few days. I think, you know, Pitt by 4 touchdowns sounds about right to me.
Well, the fact that you're this confident in Pitt does make me feel better, because last year you picked Georgia Tech to win. So if you are going that far on that side of the spectrum, I can rest easy on a Friday night. Easier.
For whatever reason, Pitt's somebody that I watched a good bit over the second half of last year and the beginning of this year. And so I do at least hope that my feelings about this one are definitely colored by just really solid play throughout the team that I've observed over, 12 to 15 games at this point. And just the competency and the stability is just so much the opposite of what I've experienced on our sidelines since then. So my expectations have greatly flipped.
Yeah, again, I don't feel any better about this, and I will not sleep on Friday night, as is tradition during the fall. But we really appreciate the kind words and the insight into the Georgia Tech hire. You know, hopefully you guys can figure something out and you know.
No. We're not going to root for Georgia
Tech. Oh, come on. A rising tide lifts all boats. A competitive ACC is good for everybody, especially when, the SEC and Big Ten are trying to swallow up the entire world.
Okay, well, not that good.
Okay. Find someone perfectly competent. Yeah. Yes.
Competence, that is, yes, absolutely. We can all root for that for each other. I'm with you there.
Perfect. Well, Robert, we really appreciate your time, and best of luck this week and in the coaching search that's going to follow.
Thanks. I hope we can do it again a year from now, and I'll be in a completely different state then too. So it's a roller coaster right now.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed for you guys.
Thanks, man.
Good to be with you guys. All right,
take care. Thanks, Robert.
Now we're back with the Loyal Sun Sportsbook, here to preview Pitt's Saturday night matchup against the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. But first, Squid, you want to give us a quick score update, see where we stand?
All right, so
I heard we did really well last week.
Bunch of really smart guys we are.
So right now, David leading the league, leading the Loyal Sons podcast. I know I said league, with 13 points. I have 11 points, and Dylan has 8. Just to recap, we had 3 total points gained out of a possible 18 from last week. So not great,
yeah.
Not great, but we're into ACC play. We didn't show up like the Pitt team. We weren't super inspired in that last non-conference game.
We weren't trying to give away the whole playbook last week, you know?
Yeah, we'll bring our A game for the ACC play predictions, so let's do it.
And to make some moves here, so let's get it started. First one, we're going to go over under 250 rushing yards for the Pitt Panthers. David, you kick us off.
Under, that feels really high, because that means that Izzy, and I think he's going to have a great game. He's just a man on fire right now. He wouldn't, even if he had a .175, we would need 75 between Sebo Flemister and Vinny Davis. And that feels like a lot. However, if, you know, a certain Rodney Hammond dressed for the game and played in the game, I could be talked into that over. However, I will sit under it.
I would love to see and could actually see Izzy just doing what he did last week again, getting close to 200 himself. So I'm going to say over. I think this game is over early and we just kind of run the ball the entire second half.
I wanted to go over here. I really did. But I'm just kind of hoping that we get to see Pitt sling it a little more. I know Georgia Tech's given up almost 600 yards rushing in the last two games. Ole Miss just absolutely ran it down their throats for the entirety of their matchup. I'm going to go under. I think it's going to be really close. I think they get around 240. I think Izzy has another probably 150-yard game, something close to that. But 250 does feel high, and I'm going to play the odds. So I'm going to go under. But I wouldn't be surprised if they go over because I feel like Narduzzi is going to want to run the ball, especially with how bad Georgia Tech's run defense has been.
Yeah.
Deuce is going to want to run, prove a point.
Something you're not considering. We threw all those screen passes last week. I feel like one of these might be technically like a backwards pass and be able to take it like 40 yards downfield. So you never know the way we're calling screen passes, how that'll play out.
I feel like the big, you know, going into the rest of these categories and even on this last one, the big question is going to be, do you personally believe that because we are going into ACC play, Pitt will open things up, you know, attack vertically, you know, start introducing some wrinkles? Or do you think they're just going to do what they did against Western Michigan and Rhode Island, but like take it a little bit more seriously? Because we're still going to have guys a little bit banged up, just getting reintroduced to their first game in a couple weeks. So I think we'll be able to give our answers in our next couple predictions, but it feels like this game is going to go one of two ways.
Great. So moving on to the next one, we've got an Izzy prop. Will Izzy go over 174 and a half all-purpose yards on the game? So he's been just putting on a show the last few weeks, racking up the all-purpose yards. We said it before, the kick returns kind of help him. Squid, what do you think? Start with you at this time.
I'm going over. I took over on the 250 rushing yards for Pitt, so I feel like I have to take the over for Izzy himself. And the big thing to answer David's question from just before this was, Narduzzi keeps saying they're going to take what the defense gives them. And Georgia Tech gives up a lot of rushing yards. So I think that's going to happen again. I don't think it's going to be conservative play, what it might look like. I think it's going to be what's there and what's probably going to work. So we're going to run the ball a ton.
Yeah, I agree with my dear colleague Squid here. I think he's going to have a very successful game running the ball, of course. Probably hit a home run again or two. But for me, the big decider here is that he will be returning kicks against one of the worst special team units in the country. So the likelihood of him getting, you know, 40, 50 yards on kick returns, even though I don't anticipate, at least I pray Georgia Tech doesn't have to kick off to us a lot. I think he'll take advantage of those opportunities against just an atrocious cover team.
And they have to kick it off at least once. So I could see him getting 40 to 50 off that. I'm going to go over on this one too. Until Izzy doesn't put up crazy video game numbers in one of these games, I'm just going to keep taking those overs. So
you need points somehow.
I got to pick them up.
Don't you think it's weird that you make the lines and you're the worst at picking them?
No, I don't think it's weird. I never win any bets. Even the ones I create, I can't win. You just seen me on NFL Sunday. Well, you did see me. We were together. It was just atrocious. I'm done with it.
Never gambling again until the next time.
Right. There's no one in the world better at their job than the people who make Vegas lines.
Apparently, there's a no city one out in the desert.
Yeah, there's a city out in the desert. Madoff people like us. And apparently there's no one worse at their job than the guy who makes the Loyal Sun sportsbook lines. So, all right, on to the next one. Enough of this. Over under 24.5 pass attempts by Slovis. I'll start this one off just to keep things fair here so I don't go last every time. Maybe that's why I'm losing so much. That's it. I'm going to go over. I think Pitt does air it out a little. I think Georgia Tech has to make some adjustments and try to load the box. And honestly, I just want to see Slovis sling it a little bit. So once again, more of a prayer than a prediction.
I'll go next. I was torn. I think that's a pretty good line you made there, Dylan. I was going back and forth. But based on my last two picks, I'm buying all in on running the ball. So I think I have a big week here. I'm going to say under. The deciding factor was you taking the over.
Just fade me.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'm kind of rethinking this, but I agree with Dylan. In fact, I am Falcon punching the over. And maybe it's, you know, it's the definition of insanity to, you know, see something continue to not work or not happen, but still try it or believe it will. I just feel like at some point they have to, you know, put a little bit more emphasis on airing the ball out. And I mean, it's kind of binary. They're either going to try to be more creative on offense this game, or they aren't. They're either going to milk the clock, or we might see a heralded forward pass from one Keaton Slovis. And I just choose to believe that this team has to be better. This Georgia Tech team has to be better than Rhode Island. It might not be better than Western Michigan, but we'll have Keaton Slovis in. So they gotta throw it more, right? At some point. Yeah. Yes.
I like the logic of they have to throw it unless they don't.
In which case they won't.
Right. All right. Same page. Here's a fun one with two special teams units who have been very suspect this year. Will there be a blocked kick in the game for either team? This includes both extra points, field goals, and punts. Will there be a blocked kick? Pat, kick us off.
I'm going to say yes. I think Georgia Tech has had like four kicks blocked this year. That is one per game. You throw in a Pitt place kicker that has not been great in Ben Sauls, who might be injured, which I don't know if that adds or detracts from this. And then you have a punter who, until his second game of football, didn't know that punts could be like blocked and returned. Because it's more fun to say there will be, I'm going to say yes, there will be a blocked kick.
I will also say yes. Georgia Tech, as we mentioned, terrible special teams. And I think they're going to have to punt the ball quite a bit. They might have like 10 punts this game, so a lot of opportunities. Also, our punting game isn't the best either, so something weird will happen. My only correct pick last week was saying there was going to be a defense or special teams touchdown, so I'm just going to keep the theme going of picking yes for all of our special teams props.
I'd like to throw on that I'd like to imagine that Junko calling his own number with a minute left up three touchdowns might be the spark our special teams needs to figure it out, because that was just a swaggy move.
That was a Servasio Dennis drop your nuts type play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally unnecessary, but loved it.
Do we think he just went rogue? Because I don't think there's any a third string walk on kicker just was like, yeah, I'm gonna dial this up.
Although if he did, that would be such a "do you know who my grandfather is" ass move. But no, I also think that there was just some like miscommunication or something.
Whenever we left the stadium, I was like, Narduzzi probably did that because they roughed our kicker and he was sending a message, and I loved it. But after some extensive research, aka Twitter and YouTube comments, the consensus I came up to was that there was probably a look that Rhode Island gave, and if that look happens, the kicker was instructed to do an onside kick that certain way, and the coaches were just pissed off that they did what he told them, but in that situation where it was a meaningless game. Now other teams can look at film and be like, hey, Pitt might do this. So he ruined surprise on Rhode Island.
It's funny when you go back and watch the video. I've tried to watch it and read the situation, and it's very tough for me to get. But it does look like Junko's motioning, like he told me to do it, like pointing over his shoulder. And Narduzzi's chewing him out, and Gavin Bartholomew's kind of just laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like this is funny. But when Andre Powell comes over and starts ripping him a new one, Bart's smile kind of goes away to like a grimace to a certain extent. So I don't know what happened. Either way, that's a story that Junko is going to have, and it's well worth it.
Yeah. I mean, he got it, so it's fine. If he didn't get it, we'd look like jackasses and failures. So
I don't think I ever made my pick. I'm going to go, no, there's nothing blocked. I'm playing the odds here and hoping I can gain a point on you two. That's all I got.
Fair.
Little gamesmanship. Okay. First touchdown score. Have we hit on one of these yet? I think David, you hit on one at some point this year.
I did. Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Squid, give us your pick.
I have to go first. I took Daniel Carter like twice already this year, and I'm afraid to go away from him because I feel like the week I do, he'll score. But I'm just going to go Izzy. There's too much uncertainty around other players if they're going to play or not. So this is my Izzy week. Give me like 4 points here, so I need to take the lead.
Wow, this is a tough one. How many points is taking defense and special teams worth?
Let me check the book. 3.
It's worth 3. Well, I'm not going to do that. I think I'm also going to go with Izzy. It just feels like the safest bet imaginable. Like, we're lucky that there aren't actual odds on this because it might be like plus 1,000.
Minus 1,000.
Sure, whatever.
You get 1 point if you take Izzy, 2 points if you take Jared Wayne, and 3 points for anyone else. But that's too much math, so we're just going to stick with 2 points for anybody.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like Izzy is the safe pick, and I feel like you two are going to gain 2 points on me. But if we go unanimous here, that just feels really lame. So I'm going to go out. I'm going to take Kanade Mumpfield. At some point, he's going to hit for me on this one. We need the Mumpfield breakout game. And if we never get it, then this offense may be a little more pedestrian than we thought it would be before the season. Give me Mumpfield. Give me 14. I see a breakout game from him, and he's going to be the first one to score.
I'll tell you, fans at home, I don't think it's possible to bet on first touchdown scores online anywhere for college games. But Vinny Davis, he's the Georgia Tech killer. People forget that.
True. True. That game was ungodly 2 years ago. But Dylan, this is a big opportunity for you. If Mumpfield comes down with the first touchdown of the game, that's some significant gains you can make.
Yeah, and if Izzy houses that opening kick, then that might be the nail in the coffin for me. We'll play it as it lies. Okay, now we got the spread. There's been a lot of talk about around this spread. It's bounced up. It opened around 18, 19. It's up to 23.5 as we're talking here on Monday night. That's a lot of points. Robert, our guests seem to think that was pretty accurate. What do you guys think? Does Pitt cover the 23.5? Can they win by 24 points or more?
You go first, David.
I think I'm going to go under on this one. I think it's more likely they win by like 21, which apparently is the magic number when we are playing dog shit teams and just trying to get out of the stadium without any more dead bodies. So I think this is going to, I think Pitt fans need to be ready for another frustrating one. Just because, I mean, we know our dearly beloved coach is a pretty stubborn guy. And I just kind of see him pumping the brakes until we have like a pretty healthy roster again. And until we're playing teams that we like logically can lose to before he starts turning it on a little bit. So I just see another game of possession, ball control, run out the clock, sound defense, but letting up a big player too, and by no means is 21 points squeaking it out, but it leaves a little bit to be desired.
Score prediction?
I will go 35 to 14.
All right, I'll go. I'll let Squid go last.
I need to do some math.
I think they do cover. And the whole time I wanted to say that number's too big. I wanted to figure out a score, but I just couldn't get myself to a score prediction that made sense for this game without seeing Pitt cover. I think the offense is going to have a good outing on Saturday. This is a Georgia Tech offense that has played three FBS teams, and in those three games, they've scored 10 points, 0 points, and 10 points. And I do think Pitt has a pretty damn good defensive unit. So I don't really see Georgia Tech scoring two touchdowns on Saturday night. The kicking game's bad, but maybe they squeak one out, miss an extra point, make a field goal. I'm going to say they cover, and I think Pitt wins with just a goofy score, 38-9, and an absolute drubbing of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets.
I had pretty similar thoughts there, so I'll keep this short and sweet. I say Pitt covers barely. If you're playing a slightly better team, I feel like they might be able to crawl back in, like Rhode Island, does some garbage time points. But ACC play, I think the coaches will be a little bit more aggressive than the Rhode Island game, which will lead to a 35-10 Pitt win. We go up early, but doesn't matter because Georgia Tech can't move the ball on us.
So we're all sounding pretty confident in this one. I don't love it. Don't love it at all, but let's be real. Let's take off our Pitt goggles and look at this as people who, you know, are just casual college football fans.
So hard to do, though.
It is hard, but Georgia Tech, they've been bad this year.
It's a scheme thing. Bad teams that can like throw the ball and with like a pretty dynamic quarterback will scare me no matter how bad they are. Like UNC back when they won three games in the season, they beat us because that's what their offense was. This Georgia Tech team, like Robert said, is not explosive. They're not going to march on us multiple times. I just don't see any way that they compete. We have the number when they're good too.
So putting your Pitt hat back on, and I'm not asking you to be negative, but if we do think that this is going to be a drubbing and that, you know, it's more like significantly more likely to be a huge Pitt win than a loss or a close game, what do you want to see? We asked the question last week. I don't think any of us got what we were looking for, but what do you want to see?
I want to see a more dynamic passing game, similar to that of what we saw in the first half against Tennessee. It was really fun to watch. I've said it over and over. Keaton Slovis, 195 yards in the first half against a team who is now ranked top 10 in the country. That showing that ability to throw the ball and stretch it out, I know that Pitt has kind of showed they can do a little bit of everything this year, but I do still think in this day and age of college football, to be a really good team, to be a contender, to win the conference, maybe make some playoff noise later in the year, not to get ahead of myself, but you have to be able to throw the ball. And I want to see some more downfield shots. I want to see these receivers that were so hyped up before the season make some plays and someone step up as that number two to Jared Wayne. Someone pick up that slack. And let's air it out a little bit and blow their doors off.
Yeah. I'm not going to say specific running or passing because, like I said earlier, I think Pitt's going to take what Georgia Tech gives them and they'll just run the ball a lot. But I just want to see easy scoring drives. We saw it a few times late in the West Virginia game and the first half of the Tennessee game where whether it was running the ball or passing the ball, we would get down the field real quick and get in the end zone. We were in good rhythm no matter what we were doing. So I want to see some of that. And that will require to throw the ball a little bit. So assert your dominance, you're the better team, and just get an easy win.
I want to see a reinvigorated pass rush. We've been decent by normal college football team standards, but pretty mediocre, pretty pedestrian by Pitt standards. There's, you know, a lot of hopefulness that we're going to see Deslin Alexander and Haba again this week. And, you know, throwing them in the rotation with John Morgan, who was playing almost every snap the first couple quarters across from Bam Brima, who I don't think any of us expected to see significant minutes in a game heading into this year. But with our rotation a little bit healthier again, I want fire and brimstone. I want that spark that we saw the last 3 years back on that defensive line. Make Sims run for his life. Kick his head off.
We're due for a quarterback dragging himself off the ground, dragging himself off the turf at Acrisure. Haven't seen enough of it this year, and this might be the week to do it. So, yeah, I agree with you. If they can kind of get firing on all cylinders, some of those – I think the overall sentiment is we want to see those stars and these highly touted position groups that we were told were so great before the season. We want to see them start to live up to those expectations, because – 4 weeks into the season, it kind of feels like, I don't know about you guys, for me, I feel like the team is not as good as I thought they were before the season. I feel a little bit better about them than I did right after the West Virginia game, but I still feel like there's another level for this team to unlock.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a next level to this team. I need to see it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that we can get there. I mean, Tennessee is going to be a top 10 team. Are they a top 10?
They're number eight. Right.
Yeah.
That's the number eight team in the country that we came back against and took to overtime with our backup quarterback on a bum leg.
Yeah, that is one of the best losses in college football this year. So let's just see more of that. We're capable of it. Let's put it together for a stretch.
But first and foremost, please win.
Please beat Georgia Tech.
Please beat the Jeff Collins-less Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets.
Please.
Please win.
Georgia. The whole day through. Just an old sweet song. Keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia on my mind.
I said, Georgia, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear. Moonlight through the pines.